On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to answer these questions. Are the Houston Rockets still legit contenders without Fred VanVleet? And are Ahmed Thompson and Reed Shepard ready to step up in his absence? Plus, Dan's takeaways from the New York Knicks Media Day earlier this week. Happy birthday to Dan. All this coming up right now. Welcome, 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 welcome to The Big Number. I am Tom Haberstroh, and as always, we do this every week with my man, your man, Dan Devine. It's The Big Number. It's a bigger number today. Just, I want to let everyone know, it's Dan's birthday week. So, happy birthday, 1 year older, one more trip around the sun. How was your birthday week? Or how is it?
It's going great. I was able to celebrate with a handful of my closest friends, the New York Knicks, by going out to Westchester to cover Knicks Media Day on Tuesday. But around that, dinner with the family, you know, a couple of drawings and hugs from the girls. So all good things. But the big number this year is 43, Tom. It's all happening. We're getting up there, you know. Like LeBron's never going to catch me. So like pretty soon there will be nobody even close to my age in the NBA. But you know, it's what we're going through. Time comes for us all. Father Time came for me a long time ago. But this week I'm feeling him on my back a little more.
Well, you know, just like LeBron, you're still putting up 25, 7, and 7 every time out. So
I love that. We're multiplying that word count at least. Our editor Matt Wong is like, if you multiply those out, that's what Dan files. But Tom, I appreciate your love for me. I appreciate your well wishes and your celebrating my birth. I want to celebrate by putting up some numbers. So hit me with it. What is this week's big number?
Yeah, we're gonna get to the big number. And I want to mention, if you're watching this on our Yahoo Sports Network new channel, the Fast Channel, congratulations. You listened to our pod last week and the week before that, telling you, hey, there's multiple ways to enjoy this show. And now it is a Fast Channel, Yahoo Sports Network streaming, also on yahoosports.tv, available 24/7, which could be the big number, but it is not the big number this week, because the big number this week is 8.4. That is the estimated wins that Fred VanVleet contributed to the Houston Rockets last season. Fred VanVleet is in the news, unfortunately, because according to a report from our own Yahoo Sports, Kelly Eco, he at a team kind of little camp get together in the Bahamas suffered a knee injury, and they did find out it was a torn ACL, and he will be undergoing surgery this week, which will probably knock him out for the entire season. And according to dunksandthrees.com, the all-in-one metric estimated wins or estimated plus minus, which once you account for playing time, 8.4 wins that he contributed to the Houston Rockets last season, Fred VanVleet as the starting point guard. And that's third on the Rockets behind Ahmed Thompson and Alperen Şengün. I feel like Fred VanVleet is one of the most underrated players in the public. However, I do think that the coaches love this guy. And also the analytics world, like all of the on-court, off-court data, the per 100 possessions, all of these things point to him being one of the very best players at his position year in and year out. I'm not saying he's Steph Curry and Chris Paul. Historically, he's not a future Hall of Famer, but an NBA champion and one of the most sure-handed, professional, reliable point guards and stewards of the game. And so, Dan, I know this was your birthday week, and this is a bummer to talk about, but Fred VanVleet getting sidelined for the season has pretty devastating effects on the Houston Rockets, but also just generally an NBA story. It's big, man. It's big. So after you blew out the candles and had to deal with this and wrapping your head around it, where does your mind go when you find out that Fred VanVleet no longer going to be a part of the team this year because of the injury?
Yeah, you unwrap the box, you open the present, and it's a whole bunch of crap inside. That's how it feels with the Fred VanVleet injury. The first thing that I thought about is, you know, you mentioned sure-handed, and that's like when a player's you know, field goal percentage is low, but their like impact stats tend to look really high. It's what those often are capturing is like the absence of mistakes.
Yeah.
Like this is a player who makes, who takes care of the ball when he's on the floor. You know, you're not giving the other team chances to go score. You're getting shots on goal every possession. And this person is adding to your floor spacing, adding to with their, the threat of their shooting and not making mistakes. And Fred VanVleet is, it's an undervalued portion of a lot of games. And it's really where a lot of his value lies. Last year in Houston, the Rockets turnover rate dropped by 2.5% with Fred VanVleet in the game versus when he's off the floor. That reduction was the fifth largest drop in turnover rate of any player to log at least 1,000 minutes. It was Kawhi Leonard, Jamal Murray, Nikola Jokic, DeMar DeRozan, Fred VanVleet. That's according to our friends at Cleaning the Glass. So we talked a number of times last season about what made the Rockets offense work. Like they, by the, you know, when you just look at the way people shot the ball, there's no way they should have been a top 10 offense, but they were around a top 10 offense all season because they were hammering the offensive glass. They were generating second shot opportunities and they were getting those shots. They weren't turning the ball over. And a lot of that is due to Fred VanVleet's ability to keep that offense on track and, like, you know, operate in the pick and roll without making mistakes and throwing the ball away. Now you look at it and say, well, where does that come from? Where's that shorthanded control going to come from on the roster? Because the Rockets, when they made their choices and how they were going to build out the roster, it was like, he's like the set it and forget it guy. You're like, you're going to get 2000 minutes out of Fred VanVleet, no matter what. And so the moves they made were to bulk up in the front court, to bulk up on the wing, to add more size and like combo forwards and big men and not at the point. And so now it's, you know, you have limited flexibility, limited options, limited opportunity to add to your backcourt mix. And the Rockets are feeling the pinch now because they're looking at it and saying, we're going to have to find some other answers in the one area where we thought we weren't going to have to worry about anything. Now it's a pretty big worry.
It is a big worry. Fred VanVleet right now, if you look at the impact that he had on the Rockets last season, 39th in the NBA in wins added, estimated wins added, contributed by just having really low turnover rate, which is kind of like the offensive line in football, that it's like you always kind of know the IQ of a fan if they don't appreciate like how good your offensive line. It's not a flashy thing, but the absence of turnovers is kind of like proving a negative. It's hard to notice it, but when you have it and have someone that is just a really good floor general, everything falls into place like a perfect little piece of Tetris that kind of perfectly keeps everything together. And just because they were out in the first round last year doesn't mean that Fred VanVleet isn't elite at his position. It just means they could have used a Kevin Durant or another superstar in place of Jalen Green. And they got that. And so it was very much a big deal for the Houston Rockets to get Kevin Durant. But also I think it took a little bit off of VanVleet and it was going to probably make him a little bit better too. I think he's even better in the postseason. Last year, if you look at the numbers, when he was on the floor, the Rockets just weren't nearly, I mean, when he was off the floor, the Rockets weren't nearly as good. In the plus minus category, minus 21 when he was off the floor, which is really important to point out because it was plus 21 when he was on the floor. That's right. It was a tie game that series against the Warriors. 728 to 728. But when he was on the floor, plus 21. When he was off the floor, minus 21. Second leading scorer behind Şengün last year in the postseason and a little bit more consistent. And so Fred VanVleet, again, I'm harping on the fact that like the offense is just going to be a little bit more shaky without him. He averaged 15 points a game last year, 5 assists per game last year, and just 1.5 turnovers. There's only one other player in the NBA that can match those numbers in the points, assists, and then that few number of turnovers. And it's Jimmy Butler, who's making max money right around there. And we all know that Jimmy Butler, playoff Jimmy, in the postseason, you just need those guys, those stable veterans who just are going to get after it on both ends of the floor. And that was Fred VanVleet. So 31 years old. I'm glad he got his deal over the summer. So we're not, you know, worried about that from him personally. But this is going to be a pretty big story. And I just wrote about this for Yahoo about the Clippers. Is the Clippers have these picks that they can maybe trade ahead of this Adam Silver ruling. And I think you might be more motivated now to double down on this season because the window's open now. Without Fred VanVleet, the Rockets are going to slide back in those tiers. And teams like the Clippers and the Denver Nuggets, I think they smell blood in the water. So it's a big deal.
It's worth thinking too. You know, the Rockets finished last season 52-30 and the number two seed in the West. But that band of teams from 2 to 7 was really tightly packed, right? Where you had multiple 50 win teams. You had even, you know, the Warriors getting through the play-in at 48 wins. The Rockets were an elite defense with a kind of smoke and mirrors-y offense. And the gap between them and Denver, Minnesota, the Clippers, the Lakers, the Warriors, it was not a gigantic gap. So the idea coming in, and we had talked about it earlier this summer in some of our free agency coverage here at The Big Number, Kevin Durant like solidifies you at that number two spot. But the glaring hole, and it struck me this morning as I was going over prepping for the show, our pal Kevin Pelton, the machine over at ESPN.com, he published a rundown of like the biggest holes of all 30 NBA teams, the remaining roster holes. And for the Rockets, he had biggest roster hole, point guard depth. He said they're hoping that number three pick Reed Sheppard can solve this problem in his second season. Houston can turn to vet Aaron Holiday, saw slightly more action. This was published on September 12th. So the biggest hole that the Rockets had to fill was point guard depth before they lost the guy that averaged 35 minutes a game for them last season and was the like rock solid, you can depend on him no matter what, at the point of attack against opposing point guards. He's the guy chasing, you know, Steph Curry around off the ball when Amen Thompson needs a break. You know, you can have him be deflections and steals kind of, like, you know, if you get a mismatch on him in the post, he's strong enough to hold up on switches, all those sorts of things. And he's going to be the high volume three-point bomber to space the floor for Alper and Şengün to operate a free throw line or in the post. When those things are gone, you really miss the quieter impacts he's made. And so, yeah, now, I mean, the Rockets, I think, you know, obviously with, you know, Şengün coming off a stellar turn at Eurobasket and Kevin Durant coming in, I think expected continued ongoing growth for Amen Thompson and some of the other young guys they've got there. They brought in Dorian Finney-Smith. They bring in Clint Capela as another depth piece up front. Steven Adams comes back for that double big kind of, you know, Godzilla ball mash you look on the offensive glass. There's still a lot to love about the way that Rockets are built, but the idea of them vaulting up to that like 55, 56, like really clearly the number one opponent for Oklahoma City, I think that takes a serious hit here.
It does. It does. You mentioned just kind of Tari Eason and the kind of different looks that they were hoping to have, and now it gets a little bit dicier. You know, we talked about this offseason on The Big Number, is just how rare we're seeing these players switching teams because of the whole free agency crunch. We just don't see a lot of free agents moving, switching teams. The weird thing is that the Houston Rockets built a lot of their team through free agency, and now there's a lot in signing guys, and there's a lot of trade restrictions that make it very difficult to upgrade right now. And we're going to talk about the different options that the Houston Rockets have in replacing a guy who contributed 8 wins last season to their bottom line. And that, by the way, that number, it's bigger than Anthony Davis, bigger than Kyrie Irving, bigger than Rudy Gobert, his impact on the win column for the Houston Rockets. And he only played 60 games. So this isn't just like, he played 82 games. So yeah, he's a compiler. No, this is also in missing 22 games, he was that impactful for the Houston Rockets. And as you pointed out by our guy KP, this is already a sore spot on the roster. Is there point guard depth? And so we're going to see a lot of teams trying to take advantage of that depth. But I got to tell you, I hope one of your little numbers is about Reed Sheppard, because I can't wait to talk about this guy. I am very excited for Reed's season.
Well, I can neither confirm nor deny that, Tom. But you know what? Maybe get us out to a break and we'll find out together on the other side.
Let's do it. Your four little numbers on the situation in Houston. And we're later going to talk about the New York Knicks because you're at Media Day, like you said. We're going to talk about the happenings there right after the break. All right, 8.4. That is the number of wins that Fred VanVleet contributed over to the Houston Rockets last season. 39th in the NBA in impact and third on the Rockets. Torn ACL for him and unfortunately going to be sidelined for most, if not all, of next season. Four little numbers about this big, big story in the NBA. Dan, what's the first little number?
Our first little number this week is plus 10.7. That was the Rockets' net rating last season when Amen Thompson played point guard. Again, according to our friends at Cleaning the Glass, which you can structure and filter out lineups based on who was playing in what spot. That's, you know, not exact science always. Sometimes, you know, this guy would be listed as a point guard. Somebody else might have handled it a little bit, but generally pretty accurate in terms of the positional estimates there. Amen Thompson playing point. So no VanVleet, no Aaron Holiday, nobody else on the ball. He's the one in charge on the possessions. Plus 10.7 net rating. That means that when he was at the controls, Houston outscored its opponents by an average of 10.7 points per 100 possessions. If that sounds like a lot, it's because it is. The only team that finished the full season with a net rating higher than plus 10 was the Oklahoma City Thunder, who, you might remember, won the NBA championship. Generally speaking, yeah. Plus 10 net rating, elite company. There are caveats to this. A lot of those minutes came, you mentioned earlier, Jalen Green being out the door in the KD trade. Another like combo ball handler, somebody else that can initiate the offense there. A lot of those minutes also came with Dylan Brooks there as like another floor spacer, another shooter. So again, out the door in the KD trade. So it's you know, you can't always say like it, what we saw there will absolutely translate. That said, the interesting thing about that, those Amen at point guard minutes is, yeah, the defense was great, top 10 caliber. And we know that, you know, Amen Thompson, all defensive team, potential defensive player of the year candidate. It's that the offense scored even better. 123 points per 100 possessions with Amen Thompson at the controls. And the reasons for that, the things that were driving it, it's the stuff that you would expect, like Houston leaning into its physical advantages. Their offensive rebounding rate was through the roof. Their rim pressure was great. About 37, 38% of their shots came in at the basket. Think about Amen slashing, getting downhill. They were attacking on the break a ton, nearly 1.5 points per transition play, which would have been 99th percentile, right up at the top of the league. So this is potentially a path forward here, right? Like, you move Amen to a point guard. And by the way, his production as a point guard, just under 22 points, 7 assists per 100 possessions, a little under 4 turnovers. So not great, but 4 turnovers per 100 possessions. 584 true shooting percentage, would have been like a top 15 for NBA guards last season. So he produced, put up huge numbers when he was playing point, and the team succeeded. So this could be a path forward, right? You bump him down to point guard, you play huge. Two of Jabari Smith Jr., Dorian Finney-Smith, Tari Eason, somebody else alongside KD and Şengün, throw Amen Thompson the keys. Maybe that's the answer here. In the situation where there might not be a perfect solution.
Dude had 3 triple doubles last year. Remember we were talking about him on this show, just like what just happened here? You know, Flubber Kawhi, that's Flubber, right. Flubber, what Kawhi. Did we call him? Yeah. I called him that. I do not want to put that on you. Damn.
That's all right. I'll take it. Can you plant a Flubber tree?
You know, does we Flubber might find
grow
out
on
here.
Trees? I forget.
If we don't hear from Adam Silver and the ruling here, I think people will resort to maybe, you know, all sorts of crazy shenanigans with the story. Right. So maybe we get some Flubber trees. So look, Amen is one of those guys that I would not put a ceiling on this guy, right? And point Amen, I thought he was the defensive player of the year last year. Just what he did for the Rockets, guarding the opposing best player, shot blocking, just creating mass chaos with Tari Eason, the Dobermans there. I thought he was the defensive player of the year last year. If you put him at point guard, you've hit on it. I just worry a little bit about their ability to get that same kind of contribution on the other end. Is like, how much can you say, hey, go be our point guard and 20 and 10 guy while also being first team all defense. Sure. It just, the list of guys that can do that in the NBA, it might be Kawhi Leonard and like who? Like there just aren't many guys who can play that good defensively and be your lead playmaker on the other end. So Amen Thompson is a huge upcoming season. And that was the case even before this injury. And so now it comes to the Reed Sheppard question, which is, you know, no Jalen Green there. They don't have him to take over ball handling duties. Aaron Holiday is there. But Amen Thompson, I think he is capable of holding things together for at least a couple months until the trade deadline when they can go out and get a guy. Because a lot of, like, they can't trade Fred VanVleet right now. December 15th. They can't trade anyone who signed this summer with the Rockets. Steven Adams, you would like to move his contract and try to go get a guy. You can't. December 15th, 14th. DFS, Dorian Finney-Smith, also trade restriction until December 15th. Clint Capella, you're like, oh, maybe we can move Clint. Like, eight guys on this roster have trade restrictions. So yeah, it's going to be Amen and Reed and Aaron for the beginning of the season here. And I am so excited to see what these two young kids are going to do. It's not that we joked about this on Basketball Illuminati this week. It's not that I'm cheering the injury for Fred VanVleet, but it reminds me of when Chris Bosh got hurt in the 2012. He tore his adductor, and then Spo and the team had to figure out, how are we going to get through the Indiana Pacers? We got to do something crazy here. Let's start Shane Battier at the four and see what happens against David West. And that unlocked Chris Bosh being at the five, and that won the championship for him against Perk and OKC that refused to go small. These adversities can turn into an opportunity. But the key in that example, why it's not a perfect metaphor for what we're doing here, an analogy, Chris Bosh came back.
Sure.
And it's just, it's unfortunate, but given what we know about ACL injuries, it looks like we won't see Fred VanVleet. So maybe this will be a good experience for Amen Thompson and Reed Sheppard. I'm looking forward to it. And I hope you're going to hit me with a Reed Sheppard stat.
I am, Tom. I had to wait a second, but our second little number is 10.6. So we were at plus 10.7, and now 10.6, because that's how many three-point attempts Reed Sheppard launched per 100 possessions in his rookie season. 10.6 three-point attempts per 100 possessions is exactly how many Fred VanVleet averaged last year. So if you are looking at, now obviously, again, your caveats here are that's a rate stat, that's a per 100 possession stat. Reed Sheppard played like 650 minutes last season. He did not get a whole lot of opportunities, a whole lot of runway to be expected when you've got 35 minutes a game of Fred VanVleet. Ime Udoka not exactly going to suffer many rookie mistakes, and you had a team that was pushing for 50 wins in the playoffs. But the Rockets drafted Reed Sheppard third overall out of Kentucky a couple years ago, in part because of that high upside shooting, like knockdown shooter. I think he was like 50-50-80 something at Kentucky in his lone year there. Like a 700 true shooting percentage. He was an absolute knockdown shooter, but also the willingness, I'm going to off the catch, off the bounce, off whatever, I'm putting it up. And to be able to say, like, you know, this Rockets offense last year, bottom 10 in the league in three-point accuracy, the share of its points that came from three-point range, the share of its field goal attempts that came from three-point range, it was already a not particularly well-spaced offense. And they made up for it, as we mentioned, with pounding the glass and with avoiding turnovers and with Şengün, you know, up fake, dipsy deuce, pirouetting his way into a push shot, and somehow that working a lot of times. But now, no Dylan Brooks, no Jalen Green, now no Fred VanVleet. Like, the most high volume shooters on that team are all gone. Those attempts need to come from somewhere. Maybe they come from Reed Sheppard.
82%. That's his true shooting percentage off the catch at Kentucky. 82%.
Pretty good.
That's pretty good. Shot 54% on threes off the ball. Translates to basically 1.6 points every time he shot a catch and shoot three. Dude, and then pull up threes, the numbers were ridiculous. I love Reed Sheppard. I think he's a lot more athletic, and we can do all the tropes about why that might be. I think he's got a huge vert. He's the son of an NBA player. His father was a star at Kentucky. I love second gen players. I think this is going to be a huge, huge year for Reed Sheppard. And I'll point this stat out. Amen Thompson last year, playing with Jalen Green, with no Fred VanVleet on the floor and no Reed Sheppard on the floor, just Amen Thompson and Jalen Green together, minus 4.3 every 100 possessions, meaning the Houston Rockets were outscored by 4 points every 100 possessions when it was just Amen and Jalen Green. Defensive rating of 116. It's terrible. That's not good at all. Even though you got Amen Thompson on there, just Jalen Green's not a good mix there. Amen Thompson with Reed Sheppard on the floor and no Fred VanVleet and no Jalen Green. Plus 9.2 every 100 possessions. Defensive rating, 101. Turnovers created way up defensively with Reed Sheppard. He's got great hands. His steal rate was astronomical over at Kentucky and a much better shot blocker. Kind of like one of those Andre Iguodala types where you don't know if it's a block or a steal, but he just has great hands around the basket. I can't say enough about how much I am still holding stock on Reed Sheppard. And that number right there, I know it's not a ton of minutes for Reed Sheppard and Amen lineups that don't have Fred VanVleet or Jalen Green last year. You throw Kevin Durant in the mix there. I think it's going to be very, very fun to see what they do with this lineup. And once the trade restrictions loosen up come mid-December and closer to the trade deadline, yeah, the Houston Rockets might decide to go make a trade. But I think this is one of those adversity might turn into an opportunity with Reed Sheppard and Amen.
It's going to have to, because our third little number is 1,255,588. That sounds like a big number, more than a million. It's how many dollars worth of room the Rockets currently have under the first apron, according to SpotTrack. They used the non-taxpayer mid-level exception to sign Dorian Finney-Smith. They used an expanded traded player exception to bring in Clint Capella. And that means that the Rockets are hard capped at that first apron. They cannot exceed $195,945,000 in salary this year.
That's a problem. You know why? Because you can't sign anybody for less than that right now. You can't.
That's right. As our friend Keith Smith at SpotTrack notes, that is not enough money to be able to sign another player right now. So you can look at the free agent list and see who's out there. You know, people right away were like, oh, Russell Westbrook back in Houston, or like even your lower wattage names, if you're looking like maybe a Corey Joseph or a Campaign or a Elfrid Payton or somebody like right. that. You can't sign him.
Isn't
you don't
that
have
interesting
the money.
Though? Is like the PA, the players union, probably is like, wait a minute, did we not think this through? Is that a bunch of free agents, vets, are trying to get on with, you know, the Houston Rockets, but they can't right now. And it's like, there's hard cap, you know, apron issues here at play. But if you're trying to raise the veteran minimum for these guys, which I think is a noble goal if you're the players union, but when these teams are capped out or right up against the cap and they can't sign these guys, that I'm surprised there isn't more of an exception here, especially in a scenario where there's a player missing the season with an ACL injury, that there isn't a way to like have that exception so guys like that can be signed in these kind of emergency situations.
You're right, because there is a function in the CBA where you can apply for a disabled player exception. If you have somebody who's on the books but is going to be out for an extended period of time, you're not going to be able to have them on. You can apply for an exemption there. And for Fred VanVleet, the amount of that would be $12.5 million. So you can go sign somebody serious for $12.5 million, right? Or trade for somebody for $12.5 million. But that still has to fit under the hard cap. Like, as it's structured right now under the new CBA, even that exception would not be allowed to circumvent is a bad word right now. I apologize. Touchy subject right now.
Would you like to call an Apple timeout?
Yeah, right. Yes, please. It's Apple time. Yeah. You would have to fit that whoever you bring in with that disabled player exception under that $195.9 million hard cap. So right now, there just isn't the flexibility for Houston to be able to add another ball handler, which is why I think, as you're saying, it's going to come down to Amen Thompson. It's going to come down to Reed Sheppard, to a lesser extent, going to come down to Aaron Holiday. Because right now, barring a cap space clearing deal, which again, as you mentioned, more than half the roster is ineligible to be traded right now. Barring one of those cap clearing deals, there's not going to be anybody coming through the door.
Yep. And luckily for them, I will say this, we're thinking about their backcourt, but their front court is as able to be point guard as anybody. You know, you look at Alperen Şengün and Kevin Durant, you're on your team. You might not need to have any guards on your team when you got those two guys out on the floor, because they can run your offense just as well as anybody at those positions. So they're going to have that luxury of having two great ball handling 7-footers or near 7-footers on the team in those two guys. But in terms of the roster flexibility, it's like me after a work, you know, I just, you know, when like you feel like you just turned 43, you know, I don't know if you've had
like
this
hypothetically. Yeah, no, I can't relate.
And there's just things that you were like, oh, I used to be able to pick that box up off the floor by bending my knees more than 90 degrees, you know? And now you're just like crunched over and you're like, oh, I can't. That's how flexible the Houston Rockets are. It's you and I at like 7 a.m. trying to get out of bed. Not very good flexibility whatsoever. And a lot of it is like, hey, when you go all in for all these free agents and trading for Kevin Durant, you kind of are cornering yourself a little bit. And it's just, you don't prepare for something like this, Fred VanVleet. And luckily he's 31 years old and he's still going to have a strong back nine to his NBA career. But Reed Sheppard, the off ball, on ball defensively. Again, I'm going to repeat this. Amen Thompson with Reed Sheppard on the floor. No Jalen Green, no Fred VanVleet, 101 defensive rating. The same situation, but with Jalen Green on the floor, it was a disaster. And I think removing Jalen Green from this scenario and just letting Reed Sheppard cook next to Amen Thompson, not a ton of minutes of Reed Sheppard playing with big guns like this, you know, playing with Şengün, playing with Amen Thompson, playing with KD for that matter. He's going to get a lot more opportunities to show that he can shoot.
And so he'll do that. They'll get those opportunities for the first couple of months of the season. And if it works out, then great. If it doesn't work out, I think it brings me to the fourth and final little number this week, which is 9. That's how many future first round picks the Houston Rockets currently control, according to a recent overview by ESPN's Jeremy Wu and Bobby Marks. That includes the right to swap first rounders with the Brooklyn Nets in 2027, when the Brooklyn Nets will probably still be quite bad. An unprotected Phoenix Suns first round pick in 2027, which is one of like the jewels of the league right now, given the state of affairs in Phoenix. And the two best picks of the three picks of like their own Phoenixes and Dallases in 2029. So those three teams, Suns, Mavericks, and Rockets, the Rockets get the two best picks of whatever those are in 2029. So things fall apart in Dallas. Things continue to fall apart in Phoenix. The Rockets are going to get the two best picks of that trio. So there's some juicy picks here in Houston. And I think, you know, you mentioned they go in with the Kevin Durant deal. Ime Udoka comes in. They are not rebuilding anymore. They're going for it. They win 52 games. They take the Warriors to 7. They go get Kevin Durant. They think their window, even though Alperen Şengün is young, even though Amen Thompson's young, they think their window is right now. So if things don't look super hot with Amen Thompson and Reed Sheppard at the controls for the first month and a half of the season, first couple months of the season, how willing would you be to put some of those 9 picks in play come December 15th and say, like, listen, we know Jrue Holiday might not be long for Portland. We know that the Boston Celtics are thinking about what their future looks like once Jason Tatum comes back. What's it going to take to get Derek White off that team? What's it going to take to get Jrue Holiday out of Phoenix, like out of Portland, rather? How willing would you be, Tom, to make that kind of push, considering when you get Kevin Durant, you're going for it right now?
I think they got to put those picks onto the table at the deadline. I think not all 9 of them, but when you look at the reason why you wouldn't is like, hey, we can't mortgage the future just to like put your chips all in. That doesn't make sense. When you have 3 stars, like 3 really good young players in Alperen Şengün and Amen Thompson and Jabari Smith, all what, 23 and younger?
Yep.
Like, you have this young core that can mitigate any sort of like, yeah, we're going to give up these picks, But you have a good mix of old vets, older vets, and just a young core that can hold everything together for the next 5-10 years. I have less worry about giving up those picks for the Houston Rockets than just about every team in the league because they have such a strong young core going forward. So yeah, put those picks into deals. The question I have here is, would they really trade Fred VanVleet's contract? Because they don't have a lot of contracts here that can get them to a $30 million number of, you know, if what you would want to get a Derek White, right? Or get to another star player, two-way guy that fits a lot of what you want to do at Fred VanVleet's position. You look at their books, KD's making 54, Şengün's making 34. There's nobody else over 30 on the Rockets' roster sheet. Fred VanVleet's at 25. And as Keith pointed out, Keith Smith from SpotTrack, how many teams are okay with trading a guy who just tore his ACL?
Yeah.
It's not a long list, right? Then you got Steven Adams at 14, DFS at 12, Jabari Smith at 12 with a poison pill provision that is going to make things tricky if you're going to trade him because of his extension coming down the pike next year. Reed Shepard's at 10, Ahmed Thompson's at 10, Clint Capella's at 6, Tari Eason's at 6. Even if you wanted to trade Tari Eason to go get a Drew Holiday or like Derek White, like you said, it's going to be tough. You got to pair him with another contract. They just don't have those guys. So it is really, really difficult to see how they're going to go get a star caliber or a Desmond Bane, maybe not an all-star, but like someone who can fill the shoes for Fred VanVleet with the contracts that they have on their roster. So that's where the picks come in, is sweetening the deal for these teams. It's going to be tough because Tari Eason becomes more valuable now on the Rockets because he's going to have to soak up a lot of playing time and pick up a lot of the duties that Ahmed Thompson used to do.
Which is going to make it his ongoing, why hasn't Tari Eason extended yet, kind of question mark, even more interesting. And maybe his agent making another round of phone calls this week saying like, so I think you really need him now. Let's see if we can get that offer up a little bit. The Rockets had a lot of excitement heading into the season. There's still a lot to be excited about, but I think, yeah, the number of questions surrounding them increasing in a real bummer of a way just a week before camp starts.
Yeah, yeah. I did love, I think Bill Simmons and Zach Lowe talked about some candidates. TJ McConnell sounded really fun on the Houston Rockets.
They're never going to let him outside of the Indianapolis city limits. He's gonna retire and immediately run for mayor. I think TJ's going to live a real good life in Indianapolis for the rest of his days.
Oh, man, that would be fun. Fred VanVleet, man, the image I have in my head is when his like face was bleeding in the NBA finals and the guy just like got up and like continued to play. And I'm like, this guy, I don't know. He's a superhero. Like, I just don't understand how he was able to do that in the NBA finals. A gamer. Look, he didn't pass away, you know, but I just feel like we got to like pay tribute to how good this guy is and what he's done with his career after being undrafted coming out of college. So yeah,
the bet on yourself, God, I mean, like nobody's done it quite like that as far as saying like, I'm going to call my shot every part of this way and I'm going to make like hundreds of millions of dollars and be a champion. Like, God bless him. Fred VanVleet has created a career that I think a lot of guys want to emulate. And of course, he'll have the opportunity to bounce back from this in a big way. But for the here and now, tough sledding for him and the Rockets.
Bless Fred VanVleet and bless you for going to Knicks Media Day on your birthday.
Listen, you go where they send you. I mean, you don't really get a whole lot of dispensations for 43. It's not like it's like a special round number birthday, you know?
Yeah, I got to hear all about this. So coming up after the break, Dan is going to give us what he experienced yesterday or on Tuesday at the Knicks Media Day right after this. Okay, so Mike Brown, you and Mike Brown, best buds now? Because you're at Knicks Media Day on your birthday, and he is a kind of jolly guy, and he's bringing out laptops at press conferences. So you're at Knicks Media Day. You wrote for Yahoo Sports, a good breakdown of all of the happenings there. So why don't you give it to us here? What was your biggest takeaway from Knicks Media Day, besides, you know, seeing all your buddies in the media room once again?
Like an extraordinarily small media room. The Knicks are whatever, like a $53 billion franchise valuation, and the media room is about this big. But
it's a metaphor, isn't it? You know,
yeah, feels pretty specific.
How much James Dolan really values the media? Make it
pointed.
As uncomfortable and annoying and sweaty as possible.
Feels pretty pointed, but I think the biggest thing to me, as far as style of play and where the Knicks want to go, obviously. The expectations, nobody's shying away from what those are. The Knicks made it within, you know, two wins of the NBA Finals, and then they fire their head coach. So the idea is we need to move past that and get to the finals. And the idea for how to do that is we need to get more out of our offense. We need to get more out of this collection of talent we've got. You know, the Knicks finished fifth in the league in points scored per possession last year, but that a lot of that was front loaded. The beginning of the season, they were lights out.
Yeah, like, our over-under was 2.5, top three in the offensive rating. Remember, we did the whole offensive rating thing, and it was like, Oh, obviously they're going to be top three. We took the under it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they ended up at 5 because they just tailed off halfway through the year.
Yeah, and so the question is, like, how does Mike Brown get more out of this offense? And Mike Brown talked about that a lot. One big component of that is get Jalen Brunson off the ball more. Obviously, speed and pace, the things that Mike Brown, you know, he sort of saw up close and personal what those looked like in Golden State when he was an assistant under Steve Kerr there on those championship teams. But then also when he went to Sacramento, we're going to jack the pace up. We're going to run. And it led to, you know, the Kings breaking their playoff drought, having the best offense in the NBA. And the Knicks saw up close and personal just how damaging and devastating an up-tempo offense that runs constantly is when they were on the business end of it against the Pacers. And so the idea is, how do we bring some of that to New York? And the main idea here is it's going to have to be Jalen Brunson. It's going to have to be Jalen Brunson being willing to speed things up, being willing to get off the ball. Mike Brown framing it as this is a way to make his life easier. Yeah, you got to be in great shape to play this way. But if we get you off the ball, you're not getting pounded as often by these defenders that are in your kitchen constantly. And if we get you moving around, coming off for easy catch and shoot looks, that's going to be a much cleaner thing for you than you having to create everything yourself. And so the as far as what that's going to look like, I think it's interesting that every player, it was Josh Hart was there, Karl-Anthony Towns spoke, Mikal Bridges, Jalen Brunson, and Mike Brown. Those were the presented to us media members on Media Day. All of them were like, we don't really know yet. Like the players are saying, we got to learn Mike's principles. We got to see what it's going to look like in practice. Mike is saying, I got to see those guys on the court. I got to see them in live action in games to really get a better feel for how they're all going to fit into what we want to do. But the overarching thing that went across everybody is Jalen off the ball. How do we make it easier for him, and how do we get him off the ball more? He sounds comfortable with the idea. He's open to the idea of doing it. That to me is where the rubber is going to meet the road. It'll be fascinating to see what that looks like.
Are you optimistic?
I'm optimistic because Brunson, I mean, obviously it's media day, so everybody's going to say they're going to do whatever is in the best interest of the team. But Brunson was like, here is his quote on playing off ball more. Obviously, once we get started, we'll see how everything goes. But I'm very open to, honestly, anything right now because everything's new and I just want to win. I've always been in different roles throughout my career, even in college. When I lock in on the role and figure out how I'm going to be the best in it, I've done pretty well. So I'm going to try to keep that trend going. Like, he has obviously been one of the more ball dominant players in the NBA over the course of his time in New York. And it's led to a lot of success for him individually and for the Knicks as a team. But he also, when he gets to the end of these seasons and they fall short, he is about as hard on himself and on the situation as anybody. He's unsentimental. It's like, we didn't accomplish the goal. That's it. Like we fell short. So he has to look at it and how do I get better? How do I become a better all around player? How do I get us closer to where we need to be? I think there's reason to believe he looks at this and says, this makes sense. And once it makes sense to him, he'll go out and try to do it.
Yeah, it's such an extreme. Like, it's such an extreme what Jalen Brunson did with the ball last year, in the playoffs especially. Just the ball dominance that we saw in the regular season, okay. But in the postseason, everything was on him to create. Like, you think that Luka and James Harden pound the rock, like dribble the air out of the ball They had, in the postseason last year, Luka Doncic had 407 dribbles per game. James Harden, 417 dribbles per game. Jalen Brunson, 550.
Wow.
Dribbles
per game. A lot of dribbling.
400 for Harden and Luka Doncic and 550 for Jalen Brunson. Now, it's not to say that you can't succeed doing that. Like, we saw Shai Gilgeous-Alexander win the title while also being kind of Jalen Brunson-esque with how much everything is on his shoulders, dribbling and trying to create and get downhill. But when you're at that size of Jalen Brunson, I just feel like it's not sustainable to be able to do that. And NBA careers are not linear. Like, the road to becoming an NBA champion usually has some ups and downs, and then you figure things out and you realize, like, LeBron James had to realize, oh, I do need to play at the four more with my back to the basket in order to unlock certain things. I don't have to do everything for the Miami Heat in order for me to win a championship. Same thing here is, like, you go through and the trials and tribulations of trying to get through and breaking through with the New York Knicks trying to win a championship. I do think this is a good thing for the Knicks, is to bring in Mike Brown to lessen the load. 550 times a game that he's dribbling the air out of the ball. That is extreme. I mean, all right, another thing on that. De'Aaron Fox in 2023 in the postseason under Mike Brown, 392 dribbles per game. So, like, 40% less than what we're seeing Jalen Brunson. So hopefully we'll see Mike Brown be able to kind of lessen the load for Jalen.
And to your point, you know, you talk about the Thunder. Like, when did the Thunder sort of pull away, or things change for them offensively in the NBA Finals? It's when SGA threw the ball to J-Dub and said, like, I'm going to get off it. I'm going to set screens for you, and then we're going to operate out of that. I'm going to trust you to bring the ball up the floor. What made the Pacers so difficult to guard so often is that Haliburton would get off it and get it over to Andrew Nembhard and let him initiate while he's running around and using the gravity of his shot, you know, shot making, the threat of him being able to make something happen off the ball, or like pull a defender away and say, you're going to get to go 4-on-4. We've seen it time and again with Stephen Curry, where Karl-Anthony Towns mentioned that, like, his first thought in terms of what this offense could look like, or what the way it could operate, might be a little bit more like off-ball screening. So, like, you're getting Brunson running around, kind of slingshotting around screens to be able to catch against a scrambled defense with some more space in the way that Steph does. And so, obviously, if that's the way this all results, that'd be a pretty beautiful outcome for the Knicks. But that idea of, you have this talent, you've got other people that can do stuff with the ball, let's let them do it. Now, I think the interesting thing is Jalen Brunson sort of took exception to the idea that he's always had the ball in his hands, because obviously when he was in Dallas, there was Luka. But there's no Luka here, right? Mikal Bridges is good. He's not Luka Doncic. He's not, I mean, is he Andrew Nembhard? Is he Jalen Williams? I don't know. But OG Anunoby can do something with the ball. He's not those guys. Karl-Anthony Towns can do stuff with the ball. He doesn't operate quite the same as, like, Domantas Sabonis did, right? So it's not exactly like one-to-one analogies for how these other systems or indications are going to work, but there's opportunity to experiment and explore and find some new pathways here if you got the buy-in, if you have the willingness to do it. Day one sounded like people were open to it and on board for it. Yep. And now remains
to be seen. Hope springs eternal at Media Day, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you see Kat being in kind of a Sabonis role, as, I don't know, more of a hub, and being able to leverage some of his shooting and passing and Jokic Sabonis type thing? Or, he said he was a lights out shooter and the lights went out. What happened?
Right. Yeah. The trust of the media here for the Knicks is, like, pretty much right after Kat sat down to start his media session, the lights went out as he was in the middle of an answer. And then he made a quick joke, and, you know, thankfully the lights came back on and we moved from there. But I think that's certainly a skill set that Mike Brown can tap into. Kat can be a little adventurous when he's operating from the high post. Some of the, like, over the head hook kind of passes that, you know, sometimes they find their target and sometimes they find, I don't know, Spike in the front row. So it's that can be an adventure. But I think that's the general idea. You brought in these talented players who can do more than one thing. Yes, Mikal Bridges can park in the corner and be a catch and shoot 3-point shooter. OG Anunoby can do that. Those guys can run in transition. Karl-Anthony Towns can screen and pop. right? Everybody, all these guys have ability, but they also have other talents. And so the question is, if having Jalen Brunson do a little bit less can allow the Knicks to get more out of all of the rest of those guys, and the Jordan Clarksons and the Deuce McBrides and the Gershon Yabusele's and whichever other, you know, the other veterans that wind up sticking on the roster, you know, they just brought in Malcolm Brogdon and brought back Landry Shamet, and we'll see. It's possible that Brunson being willing to like loosen up a little bit, give it up to get it back, can open things up for everybody else. And then maybe you do see that like upper tier, top five, top four, top three kind of offense that you're hoping for. And if the Knicks can get that while maintaining some of the defensive principles that they had under Tom Thibodeau, in this ramshackle, shuffled up East, they might actually be able to meet those sky high expectations.
There was a weird exchange, real quick. This whole like, did Karl Anthony Towns get a procedure surgery on his knee and he denied it? It's a very nebulous word, procedure. So I can understand why he would be confused on what the report was. But can you explain what the back and forth here was? Because it's all over my social media right now.
Yeah. Stephen Bonney of the New York Post asked Carl, you know, so you had, you know, like a finger and a knee procedure during the offseason. And Towns immediately was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Don't put any words out there that are like, I did not have any, you know, I didn't have surgery on my finger. I didn't have surgery on my knee. Like none of that happened. And that kind of led to some, it was a little testy in the moment. And no, I didn't get no finger surgery nor knee surgery. And then Bondi said, well, procedure then, not surgery, procedure. No, I did not have any. Where are you hearing this? You came on Media Day to come and put that out here? And he says,
yeah, that's our job. Like, right, we haven't seen you guys in months. So yes, I'm going to ask you about this. Anyway, go on.
And Bonney said, like, you know, listen, it was out there. Like, this is out there. And Carl said, who put it out there? And then he made a joke, Centel, like NBA Centel, the parody account. But then Bonney said, I think ESPN reported it. And us in the room, I think I will admit personally, I didn't remember the story right away, but it came up as sort of burbling like, oh yeah, Ramona Shelburne did write a story after the end of the Knicks season that was about Karl Towns having procedures on his fingers and knees. You know, he was treated for knee and finger injuries. And so that became a semantic argument after the end of Cat's session. You know, we moved on different questions. And then Bondi went up to him with his phone and like held his phone up. And I didn't see what was on the phone, but I'm assuming that he was showing him Ramona's story that said like source, Karl Anthony Towns treated for knee and finger injuries. And then Towns said like, you know, that doesn't even say procedure. And so then I don't know. It's who's on first, right? It's what do the words mean and how do they say, but like.
Yeah, he read the first line of the report. It was New York Knicks center Karl Anthony Towns has undergone treatment on his bruised left knee. So he's like, I didn't even see. It doesn't even say procedure, and then walks off. But like fourth graph, it says Towns had the injuries re-examined and chose to immediately have procedures so you would have the most time possible to recover before next season. So I've been covering like player health for a while. Procedures and treatments are a very wide net.
Yeah.
Of like what that actually is. Like if you've been covering Joel Embiid, you know that like these things could mean a lot. Like it doesn't mean like a full blown microfracture surgery on his knee, right? We all saw how he was limping around in that series against Indiana. Like something was up and they talked about it, that he's fighting through this left knee injury. So the idea that he's being incredulous that he could ever have had any sort of procedure or treatment on his left knee after this report from Ramona Shelburne, granted, this was what, in May when this happened? It's been,
right.
So Ramona's report was June 4th. Okay. So during the NBA finals, that was 3 months ago, almost 4 months ago, but like, it could be like an injection, like a PRP injection or something like that, where they're trying to kind of, you know, figure out how to relieve some of the swelling or try to alleviate some of the pain, inflammation. It doesn't necessarily mean the capital S surgery.
Right.
So I understand why players are sensitive about their bodies and like the HIPAA laws and all that stuff. And it's like a thing that is a touchy subject for a lot of these athletes. But to like get at the media for asking about his knee injury that he was clearly laboring through in the Pacers series, I don't think it's over the line to suggest that or ask about that. And then when you pull up the receipts, you know, hey, here's the report. I just felt like for some reason he was being evasive about that, you know? And it was, I don't know. I think Stephon was doing his job. Is like, hey, you were hurting in the postseason. It was a very noticeable thing. Did you address it? And there was a report about a procedure.
Yeah, absolutely. And this Knicks team, obviously, again, we're just wrapping it up here. They have the expectation here is they are going to fill that power vacuum at the top of the East. It's them and the Cavs, and one of those teams is going to go to the NBA Finals. They believe it's going to be them. They believe that they have the opportunity, the talent there, and the, you know, with Mike Brown and the fresh coat of paint, that's the idea. Any setbacks, any health issues, any lingering questions, those are even more magnified when those are the stakes you're playing for. So I understand Towns maybe being reticent to say yes on that, but it's a valid question. It's a reasonable thing to follow up on. The main takeaway is apparently he's feeling fine. And then Josh Hart has a lingering ring finger issue that he's like, I don't know, maybe it's going to turn into surgery. The more he kept talking and looking over at Derek Lipinski, the Knicks PR chief, he kept saying, I think Derek's about to strangle me for talking more about this. Josh Hart's ring finger on his shooting hand is going to be something to keep an eye on, everybody. He might have a splint on it and playing through it, which he says he hates things on his hand. That's not a great thing to hear. We'll see. But of all the things that are the Knicks have to sort of figure out heading into the season, health, they would hope is not going to be one of them. In Karl Anthony Towns' case, maybe it's not, semantics aside. In Josh Hart's case, maybe it will be, and much more to be revealed on those two fronts.
Did they wish you a happy birthday? Did they give you cake?
They didn't. Chris Herring was really apologetic today. That he's like, oh, I didn't know. I'm so sorry. I didn't know it was your birthday. I'm like, Chris, you're expected to know a lot of things. You're not expected to know that. That's totally fine.
Yeah, part of gold. Chris Herring. So.
Absolutely, 100%.
A genuine, he would probably really felt bad about saying happy birthday.
Which is really funny.
All right, that's going to do it for us this week on The Big Number. Happy birthday again, Dan. The Knicks, it's going to continue to be, you know, one of the biggest stories in the league is how they're going to get the most out of this offense under Mike Brown. I just think that it's going to be better for them if that number of 550 can go way down. For Jalen Brunson come playoff time. That's it for us. I want to give a quick shout out to Emmy, our producer, for producing this show and keeping us on the rails here. And of course, you got to go check out, if you haven't already, the Yahoo Sports Network, our new fast channel, where you can catch us on your television, not just over on the airwaves on your podcasts or on YouTube, but also on TV. So check us out. Yahoo Sports Network and yahoosports.tv. That'll do it for us this week. I'm going to turn out the lights just like the Knicks did during Karl-Anthony Towns. We gotta go out.